Hey folks, welcome to the Hang Your Own Hang podcast, a monthly podcast about hammocks, hammock camping, and everything related. Our goal is to enlighten you if you're a ground dweller and to entertain you if you're already a tree dweller. I'm Jonathan Kupel, and as always, this is my co-host, Mark Baldwin.
Evening, Jonathan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. We're looking to have a slight, I guess, our January thaw coming up, considering the temperatures that we've had the last couple days. So
yeah, we've really had a cold snap. It's been unusual, even for Buffalo.
Yeah, but we were due. I mean, we've really been lucky this winter. I mean, depending on which side of the coin you are on, if you're into the cold weather camping and all, it hasn't been good. But if you like the warmer temperatures, we've been really really lucky this winter so far.
Yeah, it's been very moderate, so it's nice. We'll have our month and a half of winter, and then we'll go back into the spring. It'll be good.
Yeah, we'll go from frozen to sloppy mud.
So, all right. Well, this episode's a little different. Normally, we do an interview of a special guest, but there's a guy that I've known for a while. He's actually supported me as I've learned how to do a lot of the audio production for the podcast in the past. Mm-hmm. And he recently started a podcast with his wife. His name's Gary Kirk and his wife, Christy. They started a podcast recently called Inside the Outside. And it's not hammock camping specifically, although he is a hammock camper, but they touch on all sorts of camping and hiking related topics. So instead of a regular traditional podcast like we've done, I thought it might be fun to simply share an episode that Gary and Christy did where they actually interviewed us, also as a way for our listeners to discover a new podcast for themselves. A lot of our listeners aren't as experienced with camping, and a lot of them are, but I'm sure there's a word or two some of our listeners might learn by going out and checking out this podcast. So it's called Inside the Outside. I'll include a link to it in our show notes so that people can go find it on the internet.
They already have a bunch of episodes up already, and I checked them out, and they're starting out on the right foot. They got some great content there, and I think they started out a lot farther ahead of the game than we did when we started.
Yeah.
With their absolutely. Sound quality and playing with the microphones and stuff. So,
well, Gary has the advantage of being in that profession. So I think that certainly helps for it.
Yeah.
But without any further ado, here is Inside the Outside, their most recent episode. They just published it on January 21st. And we will be back as soon as this segment is over.
Welcome to Inside the Outside. I'm Gary Kirk.
And I'm Christy Kirk. On this episode, we're talking with Mark and Jonathan, the hosts of Hang Your Own Hang, the must-listen podcast for anyone interested in hammock camping.
It's time for the interviewers to be interviewed. With 40 episodes under their belt, the Hang Your Own Hang guys are going to share some of the insights that they've picked up along the way. So, Jonathan, Mark, thanks so much for joining us today. Can you tell me a little bit about what got you guys into this whole podcasting world and what, you know, like hammock camping? What the heck? You know, I mean, that's sort of a very niche audience.
Yeah, I'll speak first. This is Jonathan. I guess I'd always been an avid listener of audiobooks, and when they came out, podcasts. I have a long commute to the next city over that I'd been doing for years. And I'd begun kind of an obsession with hammock camping. And we might get into that a little bit later when we talk about your first hammock or whatever. But the two kind of coincided. You know, I was kind of stuck in hammock camping. You know, you get into that loop where you're always looking at the forums and stuff, and it's a little bit of an obsession. And I was telling a friend about it, and he said, well, find a way to get finished on it. You know, find a way to get complete on that obsession. You're stuck for some reason. And certainly getting into a podcast was a good way to get unstuck. It gave me a chance to kind of give back and participate in a way that I couldn't do because I can't camp enough.
I know whenever I discovered you guys, I had only been hammock camping for a little while. I'm a podcast junkie, and I was looking for, you know, something related to the outdoors to listen to. And I couldn't believe it when I ran across a podcast that was specific to the thing that I was obsessing over at the moment. You know, I think you would agree, when you drink the Kool-Aid of hammock camping, it is like being part of this cult. Some could call it a family, but, you know, my wife initially, she's like, oh my gosh, you know, I think she had heard more than she cared to hear about all the geeked out stuff related to hammock camping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, me, I was with Jonathan and with his son and my son, both in the same Boy Scout troop. That's where we started getting into backpacking more. And that led to the actual hammock camping. Jonathan got me on it and all. And basically, I think it was at a scout meeting. He's, you know, it was one of those things, hey, I want to run something by you after the meeting. And sort of just said, hey, you want to do this? You don't have to do any work. You just got to do the interviews once a month, and I'll do all the production work. Do you want to have a go at it? And I thought about it for about 3 seconds and said, what the heck? Yeah, sure. How hard could it be? And
little did you know.
Yeah, 40 some odd episodes later, here we are. One of the great things doing this is putting at least voices to forum names and manufacturers that everybody that we've spoken to over the last 3 or 4 years so far. I think we're going on 4 years soon.
Yep.
So yeah, so it's been a lot of fun.
Well, your podcast has certainly helped a lot of people get into hammock camping and learn more about it. I wonder how you made the transition from tent camping to hammock camping.
When our boys were younger, Jonathan asked me, hey, do you want to go on a backpacking trip down in Ellicottville, which is about an hour south of Buffalo, along the Finger Lakes Trail, which is part of the North Country Trail. And I was in my tent. Everybody, him and his son were laughing at me because I probably had like a 60-pound base weight with my old Eureka Timberline tent that I was carrying for my son and I, and Jonathan and his son were both in hammocks. I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. Then, I don't know, a couple of Boy Scout meetings later, he said, hey, do you want to try my hammock? He wasn't going to be there. I was going to be there for the weekend. We went over to a local park, and he lent me his button a sling hammock and a tarp that he had, showed me how to put it together. I just brought my pad and my sleeping bag for my insulation, and I had a great time. And it's all downhill from there. The hours on hammock form, the hours of watching Shug's videos and Syntex's videos, and shopping on Dutchware and hammock gear, and that's all my spare time.
It's so funny the way that you describe that, because your description of your descent into this hammock madness is so similar to just about anybody's. When I was getting into it, the first thing I saw, I'm like, oh, that looks kind of cool, but it was very novel. And I'm like, yeah, I can't imagine camping in that. And my first experience with hammocks, I was actually in Malawi on a school trip with UNC. And there was this student, I woke up one morning and walked out, and she had an Eno stretched in between these two trees, and it was this beautiful morning. The sun was shining down, and it was just sort of magical. And she let me lay down in it, and I was on the verge of falling asleep when she booted me out and said, hey, I've got work to do. But you know, whenever I got back to the States, all I wanted to do was jump on those forums and figure this whole thing out. So you mentioned that Jonathan had a Hennessy. So was that your first hammock, Jonathan?
Yeah, I kind of went down a similar path as Mark. I decided that the tent that I was carrying was just driving me nuts. And I started going down the tarp slash bivy path and almost went down that way. And then I saw this idea of a hanging bivy, right? That was how I actually found it. It wasn't that I was looking for a hammock, but I was sold on this system that Hennessy had put together. And I got lucky. I did the research, started learning about hammocks, and then somebody had the Hennessy ASIM ultralight for sale in the for sale forums on the forums, hammock forums. And so Mark will tell you I'm kind of cheap.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. You're not the only one. That's why I started out with the Eno. I'm like, you know, I want to keep this simple, budget friendly, you know, just grab a box and go set it up.
Yeah. And so I got lucky. It's like, that's the one that I was looking to get and somebody wants to get rid of it. And so I started with that and I still actually have that hammock, but I don't sleep in it very much anymore.
Mark, what was your first hammock? Did you jump into the Hennessy as well?
No, I'm cheaper than
Jonathan. So you made your own, right?
I thought it was really weird too. The whole bottometry thing, I think, freaked you out.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird myself.
Yeah, I wasn't 100% sold on that. I actually was starting to look around one day, popped up on Woot was a Yukon double hammock. Ordered that for like $20 and some Amsteel to make some whoopee slings and to make an adjustable ridgeline. And I used that for probably about 3 years. It's nothing like what I'm using now, but it worked out great, and I still loan it out to people. My son uses it. You know, it's worked out real good.
So what are you using now, though?
About a year and a half ago, actually the day that Dutch put the chameleon after he was done with the Kickstarter, I actually invested in a chameleon. So that's what I've been using for, you know, what, for last year and a half, maybe? And with his modular system was what really sold me on it, with not having to invest the full amount in one time.
Yeah, that makes good sense, the modular approach.
Yeah.
So, Jonathan, what are you camping in currently?
So I went all in on the Kickstarter as an early, I think, what, early adopter or whatever they call it in Kickstarter?
Yeah, early bird or something?
Early bird, yeah. So I got I actually didn't get the early bird at the right time, but somebody abandoned a slot on the early bird. I'm like, holy moly, I'm going to catch that. So I got one of the early bird slots. It piqued my cheapness again.
Hey, sometimes it pays to hold out a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I was on the fence and I saw that. I'm like, okay.
It's fake calling.
Take my money. But I got the tarp, the overcover, the bug net, and the Dutch hammock. So I'm sleeping in that. And then, of course, the modularity is what did it for me as well. So since then, I've also gotten the sidecar and the little stowing, the little storage thing on top. And
that's the gear loft, right?
The gear loft, yeah. And then he had the gear pocket as well that most people put on the ridgeline, but it turns out it works really well in the sidecar to keep like little stuff from falling to the bottom. You can put it in the same spot and have your gear sitting at the top of the sidecar.
That's very cool. Yeah, Dutch has done a really good job about thinking about what do people need? You know, all those little niche items that fill those little needs that we all sort of think about when we're dozing off in our hammock. But he does a really good job of filling that in.
Oh, yeah. That's the perennial question, right? Which is like with the sidecar, you know, everybody always asks, where do I put my stuff? Because I don't have a tent with an entranceway or a foyer.
Well, you both talked about how your rig has changed over the years. I'm wondering what other things you've noticed that have changed since you first started in hammock camping and now. What are some of those early mistakes you made that you've learned from?
Pads suck.
Don't they?
it's a good way to get started, but that plus just, you know, being impatient, you know, instead of buying the right thing right away. And I know it's hard to know what the right thing is, but you know, it's a little frustrating thinking about like having gone through several cycles, because you know, I tried to take a shortcut here or there or whatever. Like, yeah, I can go along with a pad for a while, but then I'm miserable and I ended up spending the extra money anyways on, you know, on a decent underquilt.
Yeah. How about you, Mark?
Well, since Jonathan usually buys stuff first before me, as you learn from his mistakes.
Wow.
You have got it figured out.
You know, hey, it's, you know, it's the way, like, you know, like that first camping trip, he was freezing his butt off all night because he was using super shelter, and I was in my tent, but I was sweating my, you know what, off.
Yeah.
I've been pretty lucky. One of the things with not being able to just go out and buy stuff is I don't really have any buyer's remorse on anything that I've purchased, in the sense that I decide to get something and it sits usually in the cart for like a month. So I'm always thinking about it, this and that. So by the time I actually get the money to actually purchase it, I've pretty much has my heart set on it. I've all done the research. I've seen all the positive and negatives on the forums and other gear review web YouTube videos and everything. So gear wise, I don't think I really made any mistakes.
You let Jonathan make them all.
Yeah, of course. That's the great thing about the forums is, you know, everybody's willing to post their mistakes and see where they're, you know, where they made their mistakes and all, and post it and say, hey, I did this, don't do it again.
Yeah.
And seeing what other people did. So, hey, then I won't do that either.
Yeah, Jonathan, when you started off by saying pads suck, when I got into this, I was bound and determined there's no reason to go get an underquilt. I've already got a sleeping bag. I don't need this under and overquilt and all this stuff. I've got a pad. And I suffered on several initial outings. And then I was like, okay, I need to do something. So all I did was destroy a sleeping bag trying to make an under and an overquilt.
Okay.
You know, fortunately, I didn't totally destroy it. I can still use it as an one or the other. But initially I was like, I'm just going to cut a hole in the end and I'm going to pull my hammock through there. No, that was a bad idea. I was really uncomfortable and I was not warm. It was a horrible mistake. I finally threw the towel in and got me an under and over quilt. And, you know, the rest is history. If I could give anybody one really big tip, it's learn from our mistakes and go ahead and acknowledge that everybody that is doing this and has done it for a while, they're using some form of an under and an over quilt.
See, now I started with a pad as well, and I probably hammock camped for about a year using a pad, and I got down into, I don't know, like minus 10 degrees or something. And I was always comfortable. I never got colds at all. The big thing was just finding that sweet spot where everything just clicks. And, you know, when you go to bed at night, that might take you 10, 15 minutes, maybe longer, you know, just moving things around. The pad that I was using, it was an inflatable pad, and it didn't really shift around at all. But finding that sweet spot, then falling asleep, and then God forbid you have to wake up in the middle of the night to go water a tree or something.
Yeah.
When nature calls, because getting back in the sleeping bag, and that's, you get in the sleep, because I would use the sleeping bag as a sleeping bag, not a top quilt.
Right.
So I had the, you know, I'd unzip it, because I know a lot of people would zip it down 3/4 of the way, just throw it on top of them. I would actually get in the sleeping bag, and it would take a long time to do that, but it worked for me at the time as I was researching what exactly I wanted to get.
I think if I had tips, I'd have a couple. One would be, know yourself. Like, I am not as big of a fan of a top quilt as most other people in hammocks. In the wintertime, I'm still in a sleeping bag because I'm a very cold sleeper and I really hate drafts. And top quilts tend to be drafty for me. You know, so knowing myself and knowing what I'm comfortable with and what I'm not comfortable with is a big thing. The other is probably to take the time to test and to understand your gear and what its limits are. You know, you see a lot, I'm not going to say a lot, but it's not unusual, especially in the popular press where, you know, somebody will, you know, some hip writer from, you know, wherever writing for some outdoor magazine goes out, tries hammocking one night, has a really super bad experience. You know, one person got a bad experience because they got rained on.
Yep.
Thinking, you didn't know to get a tarp. You know, somebody else, a vlogger that Mark and I have both seen on YouTube, you know, tried using her hammock, her homemade hammock kit, her first night on the AT.
Oh gosh.
And ended up bailing, and you can understand why.
Yeah.
And unless you're buying, you know, a full kit, you know, tarp, underquilt, top quilt, you know, so insulation and weather protection, you gotta work through some of those problems, and you gotta be able to take the time to do that, you know, in a place where you can bail if you have to as well.
Yeah, that is such a good point. Use your backyard or a local park or something to figure these kind of things out. And, you know, you see so many people post about doing temperature tests in their backyard of, you know, how low they could go in a particular setting. That is the best place to learn, you know, all of your mistakes is the backyard, when you can bail out and go get a cup of hot coffee or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, being in Scouts was great, has been great for both of us, because, you know, there's always a cabin to bail out with too.
Yeah, that's what I use. But it's funny, what's like what were you saying about that one girl? It was amazing how many people went, I think it was it 2 years ago, Jonathan? I think we were down at Trail Days and we were interviewing these thru hikers that were going through Damascus. And there was actually quite a few of them that were using hammocks. But the percentage of those that were using hammocks that their first night ever, not just sleeping, but setting up their hammock, was their first night through hiking the AT.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Such a recipe in March, for disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they were, I mean, they stuck with it. I think most of them that we did, but I was like, I couldn't believe how many of them were, you know, at least set it up in your backyard, like you said, or a local park or something, at least so you know how to put it on. I mean, you've got enough going through your mind that you've got, you know, 2,100 miles ahead of you, and you're just testing your gear the first night.
Yeah, it is surprising how many people hit the AT and are trying out boots and tents and hammocks and things. One of the big things when you're camping or hiking is trying to stay warm, especially in a hammock, you know. The cold butt syndrome, everyone talks about that. And I know that you guys are in really cold country in Buffalo. I wonder how you've tackled it. I imagine it's something you had to think about really early on.
I don't really have any secrets. I think I'm just lucky that I'm more warm-blooded than I think most people are.
You are sick warm sleeper, dude.
You know, I've got just my underquilt, and I usually don't even, I mean, just a pair of long johns is usually what I'm sleeping in a balaclava.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I do have a winter tarp, that a DIY winter tarp that I bought from, I bought the kit from Ripstop by the Roll. So I can really batten down the hatches for that. If there's snow, I'll usually build up the ends so that cut any drafts off. And then not too much, maybe take one of those heaters, the chemical heater things. I usually try and put that, you know, right on the elastic of my boxers, you know, or my long johns, just to get right by your artery there to try and get the blood flowing good. But that's really it. I don't really do too much. I just deal with it.
Yeah, I'm a much colder sleeper than Mark is. I'm what they call a wuss.
No judgment, yeah. Promise.
And I'm right there with you.
Yeah, thank you. I'd say there's a few things. One is understanding why you get cold in a hammock. Really having, you know, taking the time to understand that is important. It's that breeze that pulls the heat off of you and out from under you. That's a big part of it. So there's things that you can do, even if you're trying to stay lighter in weight, that you can help to produce or reduce that. Like 2QZQ sells an underquilt protector, and it's just a piece of very light fabric. But it can make an underquilt perform 10, 15 degrees lower, surprisingly. So understanding that, dealing with moisture is a big part of it too. And, you know, to keep moisture from evaporating. So like where you're a little colder, maybe have a sit pad that you put under your butt or under your feet. I actually don't sleep with socks in the wintertime.
Really?
Because my feet tend to be cold, and, your circulation is a big part of staying warm. And a lot of people think I'm crazy until they try it. Christy?
I'm listening.
Seriously, take your socks off. Once they dry out, the extra circulation on your feet, even if you're on the ground and not hammock camping, the extra circulation will keep your feet warmer once they dry out, and not wearing the socks will keep them dry. It's shocking.
All right. So we've got a frosty butt hang coming in 2 weeks. We're going to put that to the test because I am the kind of person, I'm a warm sleeper. I have no problem going down into some pretty good low temperatures with very light quilts or mm-hmm. sleeping bags. However, my feet are always cold. My feet are cold right now and I'm in the house, but, you know, so I'm going to put that to the test and okay. I'll get back to you on that. I would love to find a way to be able to keep my feet warmer because I've found if I can keep my head and my feet warm, the rest of my body, whether it's placebo or whatever, the rest of my body seems to think it's warm.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't guarantee you.
Yeah, we're not going to put any money on this. I won't hold you to it, you know.
I would put $5 down on this one. Seriously, it's been so effective for me. Dry your feet off. Get your feet into your underquilt, into the little foot box. Don't put socks on, especially like layering up the socks, because you drop your circulation and your feet get cold.
Very good point. I'm anxious to try this out because I'll try anything once, maybe twice if I like it.
Yeah, I'll definitely try absolutely. It. And I have a plan B on this frosty butt hang that we've got coming up. I know where the hotel is, not too far away.
Yeah, we've done a few trips that were down in some low temperatures, and there is no shame if the car is close. Just get out, because at the end of the day, it's about having a good time.
It's about getting rest. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The only other thing I toss out there is if you're backpacking or even car camping, the hot water bottle thing with a good Nalgene really does work. So that's that. I assume you guys are familiar with that.
Yes.
So that works really well.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of it. I've never personally tried it because here's my thought process. When the water gets cool, I'm going to be in the bed with a cool bottle of water. I don't know if that's, you know, going to be a factor that would then cause my feet to get cool. Have you guys actually tried that method out?
I haven't.
I have. That got me down to my lowest, which was 12 degrees.
Holy cow. Yeah. Very, very good. I've been down in the teens a couple times in my hammock and I've done fine. My feet have been a little chilly, but I usually just go with a fresh, dry pair of heavy wool socks, you know, loose fitting because you do bring up a really good point with the circulation. But I always, maybe it's a mental thing. I feel like I have to have socks on. So we've talked about car camping, backpacking, hiking, and that kind of thing. What kind of outdoor activities do you really enjoy? What is it that gets you off your butt and moving around?
I like doing the long hikes. I mean, car camping, I enjoy it, but I'm not one to really stand around hanging out. I will at night, you know, around the campfire, but after doing that all day, I have to keep busy all the time. I like doing the hiking. I'd like, you know, maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 miles because usually we're driving an hour, hour and a half or so to get to the closest place and then get situated, do our hike, maybe stop for a long lunch or something, and then get to camp and then do our camp chores.
I like car camping with my family because I prefer to do all the camp chores. So that keeps me very busy. But I agree with Mark. I'd rather be doing long hikes if I'm going to be hiking.
Yeah, I think that's the area that Christy and I, it's sort of what brought us to a mutual agreement was the hiking. She does not like to camp. I actually love to camp. I can hang around camp. Now, I want to be camping near water, so that usually means I'm going to be fishing during the day. But for Christy, the only way that I could get her out in the wilderness, she said, you've got to hike me far enough into the woods that I'll be too tired to go back to the car. And so we went on the AT and, you know, the rest is history. I got her all the way out there. And, you know, in spite of all the mistakes that we made, the lessons that we learned, we agreed that we actually loved it. And we were, you know, gluttons for punishment, if you will. But, you know, it's been a really fun experience. Because we like that hiking. Even if we go and set up sort of a base camp, we want to hike out from that and go experience things. We're not going to just sit around in that one spot, or at least she's not.
Yeah, my wife isn't really that fond of the backcountry camping. So I do enjoy the hiking with her, the day hiking and stuff with her. And she'll do very long hikes. We've we're starting to work through the 42 high peaks up in the Adirondacks.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, I acknowledge that idea that the two of you worked out what works for both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's the most important part of that conversation.
Yeah, you have to find a middle ground that you can both agree on. Otherwise, yeah, nobody's happy and you're not getting to do the things that you love. And, you know, it really worked out for us.
No, and I do love the hiking. And I understand your wife not enjoying the backcountry camping. I don't really enjoy that either. But if I'm tired enough, it's okay.
Yeah.
And some of the places we've gone, you know, I couldn't see them any other way. So to me, the camping is the price to pay to see some of those amazing views.
Yeah.
But I do wish there were little cabins or hotels in the backcountry.
Well, my wife hasn't realized that you can't do all 42 without a couple of overnights.
Okay, we'll edit that part out. We won't let her know.
But I'm trying to work through what I can do to make her more comfortable. Like, you know, I've got a friend who spoke very highly of the Sea to Summit backcountry sink.
I actually have one of those.
Yeah. So like maybe, you know, gonna have to do it anyways, maybe heating up some water and giving her some fresh water to, you know, just to wash her hair or whatever in the morning. You know, those kind of things are the things I'm kind of starting to work through, because I know at some point it's going to be a conversation that we need to answer those questions or we not accomplish this particular goal.
Yeah. And, you know, really and truly at the end of the day, it's totally worth adding those extra ounces or whatever to your pack to make sure that she has a good experience. Because I remember we went on our first hiking trip. My ultimate goal was to make sure that Christy had a good experience so that we could do it again. Now, I don't know if she would call it a good experience, because we learned a lot of lessons on those first couple ones. But, you know, I must have done a decent job, because she is continuing to return.
Yeah. I mean, what's your experience been like, Christy? What are those things that make it a little bit more tolerable?
You know, little luxuries. So you're talking about the portable sink. I think that's a great idea. Food that you can't necessarily have, you know, multiple days of the hike because it's perishable or whatever, but having it that first night and having that treat, those are things that help.
Yeah. We started the first sort of backpacking trip was very, very sanitized. We were at a state park and we only had to go a couple miles. It was only 1 mile of a hike back out to get to a place that had a restroom and showers if you wanted it. And I packed in some food so that we ended up having smoked salmon fresh off of the fire. We made some shrimp scampi. I figured out a way to make cheesecake. You name it. I wanted that experience to be top-notch, five-star gourmet out in the field. Now, you can't do that when you get, you know, 30 miles down the trail. But on that particular weekend, I wanted to make sure she had a good experience.
The hardest part, I think, for me with the multiple day backcountry is that you are dirty. You feel kind of gross. And, you know, there are no restrooms and you have to learn to cope with that. And once you get past that, your first trip, it's easier every time. But little luxuries make a difference.
So I'm curious, you guys are like my go-to hammock camping people. On your podcast, you guys are interviewing everybody. You sort of have your fingers on the pulse of the hammock camping world. What are some trends that you're seeing in the hammock camping world right now?
I don't know. You know what? I've noticed, actually, I don't even know if, Jonathan, if you saw, there was a comment on our website. Somebody posted about another integrated underquilt hammock, that there seems to be more and more of those coming. I think there's been seeing some more of the pod system, some more cold weather gear.
Mm-hmm.
There's all the new fabrics. You know, Ripstop's got the, are they the Outdoor Ink, is it?
Yep.
So the, you know, customization for stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I know Dutch has his own as well.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this a little bit today, because this one's a challenging one. I can say one thing is that there's been a bigger penetration in the consumer market with cheap products, which is unfortunate. You know, it's getting more people out there, but you're seeing a lot of cheap 9-foot hammocks with ropes, for instance. You know, they're in bins at Walmart. you know, on the aisle, which, you know, tells you something right there. You're also seeing, I think, more in the consumer space at the higher end, more thoughtful products that are the systems, as opposed to, you know, one of the things that the four of us really kind of experienced was kind of working through putting the system together for ourselves. You know, what top am I going to use? What suspension? And, you know, you are starting to see vendors putting the systems together for their consumers so that they don't have to think as much about that. Because as much as we like it as kind of nerds, hammock nerds, you know, thinking about that, a lot of people, that's only a small part of their camping experience.
Yeah, that's a really good point because, you know, for us, we're those gearheads. We like that kind of stuff. We geek out on. But there's a lot of people that, you know, this is not their primary thing. So it's nice to be able to have one of those, you know, sort of out of the box options. I've seen what you're talking about, the really low end things, but I like that there are some good quality vendors out there that, you know, like you mentioned, the Dutch modular approach. That's a great way to be able to get into a high quality item. And, you know, have somebody like Dutch who, you know, if you need to ask a question, you can pick up the phone and call him and he'll talk to you. He'll help you out. You know, that's priceless.
I think, you know, that penetration at the higher end of the market for people who aren't like kind of DIYing or building themselves is a big thing that serves the market, I think, in a different way.
So recently we got to go down to South Carolina and test out a couple products for Terrapin Outfitters, who is now a sponsor of our show. And one of the cool things that they've come out with that on one hand, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so simple, which is the turtle tote. It is nothing more than a double-ended stuff sack with a zipper on it. But the cool thing that they did is they figured out a way to where you can be able to have your entire hammocking system, whether it's the underquilt, overquilt, you name it, everything can all be pre-assembled and you stuff it all in there and you can deploy your entire rig in like under 2 minutes. It's that accessory industry that I'm noticing the next wave of innovation happening. You know, there's only so much you can do to invent a quilt or reinvent a quilt. So, you know, stuff like that, you know, the turtle tote's cool. The Dutch pup tent, I thought that was pretty cool. Or the hang time hook, you know, these little things that, you know, like Chrissy had mentioned, those luxury items.
What I need is warm. And so I like hearing about the modular hammocks with the built-in underquilt, because I use an underquilt year round. Well, I guess most people do, but I use everything you can use to keep that hammock warm year round. It doesn't matter what the temperature is. It's never warm enough for me. So I love all those modular options. I think those are great innovations. And I love hearing that companies continue to make quilts better and warmer and more comfortable.
Yeah. We were talking to Warren Ashworth from Cedar Ridge a couple days ago, and I told him the next thing he needs to make is a heated underquilt. Christy would buy that today if there was some type of a battery-powered USB connectivity device that would heat up her underquilt for her.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Well, they've got the jackets and everything now that I see in the construction, you know, the stores and stuff, the, you know, I think Milwaukee and DeWalt, they're all making them now, but
take a look at the underquilt protector though.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea because it's similar. Like you mentioned, you know, if you need a windbreaker, you can throw this really light fabric on you. It cuts the wind and really increases your durability and the warmth of whatever jacket you might be wearing at the time. So it only makes logical sense that it would work on the underquilt.
Well, I will be seeking out an underquilt protector. My underquilt's great, but like I said, the warmer, the better as far as I'm concerned.
It'll push it down.
Yes, I can. Yeah. I can't wait to try that.
So as we wrap things up, I'm curious, what do you see as the future for hammock camping? Do you have any parting words about, you know, that crystal ball look into the future?
I think it's only going to keep getting bigger. I think that as it gets bigger, I'm hoping, especially after speaking, I forgot his name, who you're spoken from the Utah State
from the state parks. Yeah.
I think that they may jump on the bandwagon where we might see more hammock sites I don't think it's a fad that's just going to go away. I just hope it's I like the slow growth sense of it, where I don't want, you know, too many people just jumping out and then giving all of us a bad name and causing problems in the state and the federal parks.
The other side of it is an ongoing hope I have, which is to continue to see the camping hammock as a complete system to penetrate more into the consumer space. You know, these thought out systems that include weather protection and insulation as part of the kit, so that, you know, more people can go and enjoy it and have a great experience. And there'll be less need for people like us to advocate for it as outsiders, that it'll just be a normal part of the options that people have for camping.
Well, Mark and Jonathan, I really appreciate you being on the show today. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. I hope we can get together again someday, maybe find each other on the trail somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks.
Awesome. Yeah, we enjoyed the time. Thank you.
Inside the Outside is proudly brought to you by Terrapin Outfitters. Terrapin Outfitters is an innovative company that specializes in developing clothing and gear that enhance people's enjoyment of outdoor activities. Check them out at terrapinoutfitters.com.
And follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Look for the handle Inside the Outside Show.
For links to our social media and other stuff that we talk about in the show, be sure to check out the show notes and our website, InsideTheOutsideShow.com.
So this year for our trending topic, I was thought of this not intentionally a couple days before Christmas, and this is from personal experience, and it's not really something that I think of the original use maybe would be for, but personal locator beacons.
Okay.
And usually, okay, everybody, I mean, a lot of people, especially through hikers, or if you're in the back wilderness, people will be wearing these in case something happens to them. And I never really thought until I started reading some comments on something that happened to me, where it's not that something happened to you, but something happened back at home. So quick backstory, a couple days before Christmas, you and I were out down in Allegheny National Forest, down Minister Creek we were.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody that's been in that area knows that it's about, 10, 15 mile. It's about 10, 15 miles or so that there's no service, nothing, not even one bar.
Right.
And you know, primitive. And so Saturday morning, I drive home. And I get a phone call from my wife, or a message or something. And I was driving, so I ignored it. No message, no text message or anything.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, nothing urgent. A couple hours later, I pull in the driveway, walk in the house, and I see her on the recliner with a pair of crutches next to her. Ended up, she got up in the middle of the early in the morning. Tripped on one of her pajama bottoms and landed on her big toe on the opposite foot.
Mm.
She thought she broke her toe until she took her first step and felt the toe flapping in the breeze.
Ugh.
So it wasn't broken. It wasn't just broken. It was a compound fracture with blood everywhere. And if she didn't bother calling our son, whose bedroom is up on the second floor, because he just got his license, so he could drive her to the hospital. But she knew he wouldn't wake up, so she called her mom, who came over and knocked on the door, because she knew she'd be able to go answer it. So anyway, she tried calling me a whole bunch of times. So anyway, they brought it to the emergency room. They sewed it all back together. And so far, everything is good. But I started thinking, what happens to when something happens to somebody at home? You know, a child gets sick or injured, wife or significant other gets sick or injured. How can they reach you? And pretty much you've got an option of a sat phone or a two-way personal locator beacon.
Right.
So there are a couple types. Now, if it's the Garmin inReach, that's a two-way, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the other one that's the Spot, correct?
Yeah, Spot is from somebody else. DeLorme, I think, right?
But that one, from what I was reading, is only a one-way in the sense where you can send out an SOS, but they can't send, you can't, they can't, somebody can't text you.
Right, right.
So that's more of a personal, like a true personal locator beacon.
Right. And just to be clear, it's from Spot.
Okay. Okay. So, but it's something I really started researching now where it's nice to be able to, in an emergency, now all of these have monthly subscriptions. Mm-hmm. The inReach now, you can do a bi-month a subscription. You don't have to just have it on all the time, mm-hmm. which is great with, you know, someone like me that, you know, I might go out for a weekend here, a weekend there, and many times you can get some signal. It depends on, you know, you might have to go up on this hill to get a signal, but usually you can get a signal. It just happens to be when this happened, we were in a spot where there's not even a hint of a signal.
Right, there's nothing.
Yeah, so. So, yeah, I think it's something that I just started. You know, I think it's on my list now of things that I'm going to be purchasing eventually.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, just from my own experience. So, there are personal locator beacons, and they are radio-based, but not GPS or they're not necessarily two-way. I think a lot of what people are familiar with is, like you said, the inReach or Spot two-way messengers. Mm-hmm. And those are actually built on the Iridium satellite network that was put up a number of years ago. And there are a bunch of low-flying satellites that that there's usually one up ahead, above, you know, every 20 minutes or so, worst case.
No, they're actually on two separate networks, correct? The Spot versus the inReach?
Well, I know that the inReach is on the Iridium network. The Spot one, which I'm not as familiar with, I think is on a different messenger system. I think it uses, let me think here. I'm actually trying to quickly look it up while we're talking. It's using,
I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah, let's see, Globalstar, which was a competitor, yes, to Iridium. And I think when people nowadays talk about beacons or locator beacons, they don't think of the product of last resort, which used to be, you know, when you would activate the beacon, it would continually broadcast until it ran out of batteries, and it was designed for search and rescue to find you.
Yeah, in case you get to an, you know, break a leg or something where you can't get out, or
right,
a true emergency.
It's the product of, yeah, exactly. It's emergency of last resort, you know. And whereas these PLBs are really for not only last resort, there is an SOS feature that will call out search and rescue. In fact, I know the inReach product includes reasonably priced insurance policy that covers the cost of search and rescue. And I understand that there are people who have used that and taken advantage of it. So there's that.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to have to spend money on the gas bills for one of those helicopters to evacuate you out.
Well, to be honest, I will spend whatever it takes, but I wouldn't like it.
Yep. Yeah, no. Until you see the bill.
Right.
Can you put me back?
Yeah. That being said, you know, I actually tested one a number of years ago and recommended it to our local council because they were actually using satellite phones that they were renting at $100 a phone per week, which was really cost prohibitive. And now they just have a couple of these messengers and it costs them, I think the annual fee is, there's an annual fee, like you said, and that's like $100 a year to just simply have access to the service. And then it's, you pay for whichever months you want to use it at whatever level you want to use it. I actually decided to go out and get one myself And I pay $15 for those months that I use it. And that's the very minimal product, but I can send some standardized messages. Plus I get like six text messages for free. But the cool thing is, like you said, there's that convenience aspect where you suddenly have a phone number connected to this device. Anybody in the world can reach you. You know, after that sixth text message, you can still keep sending text messages. And it's actually kind of funny. I hadn't thought about people trying to reach you.
Yeah, I never thought of that before until this happened. And actually, there was – I posted about this on Hammock forums and a couple Facebook pages. And it's actually happened quite a few times to other people where they came home to surprises, or even they had one of these and they were able to, you know, get off the trail. You know, so a lot of times like us, you know, we're driving a couple hours, or many people too, you're driving a couple hours just to the trailhead. So, you know, but it'd be nice to, you know, if it happens in the beginning of your trip, get home a couple days early, or, you know, whoever, whatever is happening back at home while you have to leave. So instead of, it could, you know, you never know, it could be a worse situation if you come home a couple days later.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, absolutely. The other thing, I was watching an episode of a YouTube video. This gentleman that was doing like hiking videos, and he was saying that his wife was sending him weather updates of the region he was in every day to tell him what the weather was going to be like, because he didn't have a weather radio or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So he was not only using it as a locator beacon so that he could kind of tell his wife where he was, but she was actually actively sending him information, helping him with his camping trip, which was really neat.
Yeah. Actually, I'm on the Garmin website right now as they're speaking, and many of these now, they actually, the different versions of the InReach, they actually do have weather right to the device.
Yep, the newer ones have weather services built in. It does consume one of your text messages. Mm-hmm. Because essentially you're doing a two-way message, but right. Yeah, the one I have doesn't have the weather feature.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not familiar with it from my own. The other thing that I think is really cool is you can pair it up with your mobile device, iPhone or Android, and you can actually send and receive text messages using your regular mobile device. So you're not messing around with some awkward on-screen keyboard or anything like that. It's actually just sending. It feels like you're sending a text message.
Yeah, so it's, you know, a lot of times we're taking our phone out most of the time, whether pictures or checking maps or using that as GPS. So it'd be easy to just take that out and text right through that instead of having to take something else out of your pack, or, you know, unclip it from the straps of your pack. Because you're probably,
yep, I mean, absolutely. Like this,
you're not going to be packing deep in your pack, because it has to get a signal still. So
right, so it's got to be clipped out on the outside of your gear.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, so it's a neat product, and it's a great way to manage that risk, both for yourself but for the people at home as well.
Yeah, yeah, and it was hopefully I won't have to worry about that again.
Next time we leave, your wife goes to the spa for a couple of days.
There you go.
They'll keep her safe.
Yes. I don't know.
So, Mark.
Yes.
So you recall that episode 28, we interviewed Richard and Julie, the owners of the Sierra Madre Research Company.
Yeah. Yeah. It was quite a long time ago.
It really was. And, you know, I really thought they had a unique product design with their new bay. And they had a really unique approach in terms of their social activism that they're doing in combination with their product. One of the things that we don't always get to do, though, because I guess just because we don't always get to circle back and talk about the products that we interview people about, you know, for one reason or another. For instance, we already have our normal camping hammocks. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go out and buy new camping hammocks, and we're not really a product review podcast.
Right. Even though I'd like to, I mean, everybody that we've talked to, I almost want to just go out and buy every time that we talk to somebody, because we've talked to some great people and all.
Yeah, and people have some really amazing ideas.
Yep.
But in this particular case, the folks at Sierra Madre do, they basically do a gear auction on Facebook where they'll take products that have been returned or might be slightly damaged or whatever, and they'll, you know, they'll put them up to auction. And so I actually participated in the auction of an early model New Bay that they had actually shipped out. This is actually the one they had shipped out to Shug for his review, which I will add a link to our show notes for this. So I actually bid on and won the New Bay that Shug tested himself, which is kind of cool. So I thought it might be cool to circle back with our listeners and just kind of give my, you know, experiences and opinions about the about this particular product. You know, a lot of times we talk to, like I said, you know, we talk to the folks and they, it sounds like they've got some really great ideas, but you know, when the rubber hits the road, you know, the product's either a great product or it isn't.
Right.
If people want to get an actual review, they can go to watch Shug's review. Derek Hansen from The Ultimate Hang also does a really excellent review as well. So I will add those links to those reviews in our show notes rather than doing a full review of the product myself. I can't, you know, show what it looks like. And the videos themselves are pretty well done. But anyways, I would like to give my feedback on the product and how I experienced it since, you know, I've gotten it and I've actually camped out in it a couple of times. Like I said, this is the one that Shug tested. Shug, if you're listening and you wanted to test it again, let me know and I'll ship it out to you. You can try it again. It's a nice product. It weighs a little over 3 pounds. So it's a little on the heavy side, 3 pounds, 3 ounces actually for the complete kit. And this includes the New Bay, which is essentially a tarp with an integrated bug net and an integrated gear sling on the bottom, or you can alternatively use it as a gear floor, a double-ended stuff sack, the stakes, and the suspensions. So this is basically everything that you need other than a hammock and probably insulation.
Yeah, it's really a nice system. I was looking at it when on a couple of our trips, and yeah, it's really has everything in it. So like you said, just a, you know, it'll, something great if you've got a hammock that doesn't have a bug net attached to it and you want a tarp and a bug net combined.
Oh yeah. You know, well, I guess I'll just go through some of my dislikes and my likes, and I guess we can talk a little bit about, you know, my experience. But first off, I think I'm going to say, in spite of that, it checks a lot of boxes, it's really, really heavily engineered. Some people might say it's over-engineered. It's a very complex design. I don't know if that's good or bad, but you know, it definitely takes away from, you know, the simplicity of a regular old hex tarp. It's also a bit heavy. The material, you know, is a heavier material. It's almost like a hanging tent as opposed to just a tarp. And the weight of that reflects that, you know, over 3 pounds is a lot just for a tarp and a bug net. You know, that being said, there's a lot of material and it's that's the reason why. The seam sealing was really heavy and awkward. I think that may be what Shug had done because in his review, he mentioned that the seams weren't sealed. I understand now, just as a side note, the production's ones are seam taped. So I know Shug mentioned that he was getting some water inside of it, and I don't think that happens anymore. I also didn't like that the suspension was essentially the same as the lashing style that I used to use on my Hennessy hammock. So instead of using like a continuous ridgeline or attaching it to the ridgeline of the hammock or something like that, I think, you know, the assumption in the videos shows what you should be doing is the over under lashing that you would have used for like the original Hennessy hammock. And I just felt like that method of attaching the tarp to the tree was a little awkward. The other thing is getting in and out of it, just the way the bug net is attached to the bottom of the tarp is a little awkward. You know, you have to unzip it quite a bit, then get in your hammock and then be able to kind of reach way out to zip it back up again. So I think they addressed that in the Stratos, which is a different product with a vertical zipper instead of a horizontal zipper. But I think the New Bay still uses a horizontal zipper when you're using the zipper. you know, there's no method for doing a porch mode, which I know you and I really like when we're at camp, being able to, you know, tack up the edges. The system is designed to be used as it's designed.
Right.
So you can't, you know, pick up the edges or anything like that. It's really, you know, it is what it is. And I guess the last thing is there's some marketing speak that they used for describing their product. And while that's not a negative for the product, it's a little pet peeve of mine. The marketing speak sometimes comes off as being less than fully sincere. So instead of calling it hammock camping, they call it air camping. You know, bug nets are now called insect shields. Gear hammocks are their gear stashes. And their suspension, they call the sky hooks. You know, why? I don't know why marketers like to invent their own language to replace what the industry already has language for. That's fine. You know, it's just a little pet peeve of mine. So there you have it. Some complaints about the product. That being said, on the positive, this is probably going to become my go-to car camping kit. I like some of the things about it. You know, the fact that it's heavy means I'm not going to backpack with it, but it is like hanging your hammock inside of a tent. It is hugely spacious, in a way that no other jungle hammock that I've had or experienced is spacious. You know, you don't ever turn over and have bug net up against your face.
Okay.
And because of the way the tarp is designed, although you can't really do, you can't do porch mode, the pullouts really make sure that you have plenty of coverage in inclement weather. I never felt like I was at risk of getting wet from rain in this thing. It feels enormous. You know, even I think using in the cold weather, I think it would work really well, especially adding the winter cover, which they have that kind of goes over the bug netting. You know, that system I think would protect you really well from inclement weather. You know, I like the floor and I or the integrated gear hammock. I didn't think I would, but to be honest with you now, I'm actually tempted to DIY myself a gear hammock for just regular backpacking. I like being able to kind of tuck my stuff underneath the hammock, but not put it on the ground. I think that's a pretty cool thing. And I guess finally, there are some really thoughtful touches. You know, you talk about the idea of it being over-engineered, but I think you could also look at the flip side of that is that the Rets really thought through a lot of things that are good for people who are either introduced to it for the first time or are introduced to their product for the first time. You know, they use QR codes to direct people to how-to videos. You know, the hammock suspension has a sleeve that goes over the suspension, so you're guaranteed that you're never going to get wet. You know, I like how they use little Velcro, extra Velcro latching to store your tie-outs. And I like the, you know, that there are some gear pockets on both sides of the new bay for putting your stuff so that you don't have to put stuff on the ground or in your bag or whatever. A lot of really thoughtful touches. And of course, finally, I do really respect the social consciousness of the Rets, you know, and that they're taking some of their profits and redirecting them towards helping other people to advance themselves. You know, I guess, you know, the folks at Sierra Madre, they really worked through a lot of the stuff that you'd want. You know, from the beginning, I've always said that I like systems where things are more integrated, where you don't have to put together, you know, you don't have to put parts and pieces together from different places to make things work. And I think they really have a product here that works that way. You know, it's an all-in-one product.
Yeah, so overall view then, thumbs up?
Definitely a thumbs up.
Yeah. And I think like you said, how, you know, it's a little heavy for backpacking, more of a car camping thing. I think that just goes along with any product out there where they all have their different uses and different situations that they work best in, you know, and it's a personal thing too. And I think that's one of the big things that really, it's almost a double-edged sword with hammock camping is, especially for somebody that's getting new into it. And I know I went through this when I started hammock camping, is there's things that are, it's overwhelming with how many ideas and products that are out there and how they're all, how to integrate everything. But at the same mm-hmm. time, you can customize how you want everything. And that's sort of where this really fits in, I think. And you said, you know, this is your go-to system for car camping now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny because, you know, I have several choices now for what I can use for camping. And, you know, if weight is not a problem, this is the product I'm going to grab.
Yeah.
You know, I love the spaciousness. I love the way a lot of things are thought through. I made a couple of my own adjustments. I swapped out the suspension for my own suspension, but you know, that's hardly a killer problem.
Yeah, I was, you know, I looked at it when you set it up on a couple of the trips and stuff, and yeah, they definitely thought of everything. I like all those, you know, I sometimes like some of the over engineering things where like something that could make anything that's convenient, that helps organize things. Like you said, the little Velcro tabs on it for all your lines for your tie outs and stuff. I thought that's a really mm-hmm. cool idea. It doesn't even have for the, was it this one that had the Velcro on the outside for the bag, for like the steak bag? It Velcros right to the side of it. Was that this one?
Yep. This is it. Yeah. They have a bunch of stakes that you need to have with the system, and the steak bag is removable, but it just sticks to the side of the stuff sack, carry sack, the double-ended carry sack. It all just kind of works together.
Yeah, I like things like that and all. And I do, like you said, with the sleeves, I thought that was a great idea with, you know, you could extend those out almost to the trees to help keep help keep water running down the lines from your hammock yep. suspension.
Yeah. I had my hammock set up in here last summer on a camping trip down in the Ithaca region. And we got some pretty heavy deluges. And not only was my camping stuff, all my, you know, my top quilt and my under quilt was completely dry. All of my gear, which was in the gear stowage underneath the suspension, was also completely dry and protected from the rain.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I really liked it. And, you know, I've seen some other of the products, and all of the Sierra Madre stuff is great stuff. I remember seeing some of their quilts down in Hancon last winter when we were down there. And everything, you know, everything is thought out really well. So this is, it's real interesting. I like it. So
yeah. So kudos to Richard and Julie for putting together a solid product, and I'm looking forward to being able to join in the future.
All right, it's time for this month's Hanging with Gresh and Spagyver. Just like for the past couple of months, I'm Gresh, and I'm joined by Mark Orton, better known to most people as Spagyver. So how are you this month, Mark?
Doing really well. Just looking forward to getting out. I got a trip scheduled after work tomorrow, jumping in the truck and going and meeting Rain Man and spending 4 days out on the trail. So really looking forward to it.
I am deeply jealous, but, you know, at least here in South Carolina, you know, we're getting close to the end of January, which means it's going to start warming up at the end of February, and that means camping season gets really ramped up for the spring. You know, get the 2 weeks in before summer kicks in and just roasts everybody back inside.
Oh, yeah. You got to get out now while it's still bearable.
Yeah, get out while the getting's good. So let's jump straight into this question that comes to us this month from NJ Surfer on Hammock Forums from way back in, actually, 2016. So we're reaching back into the archives to get a hold of this one. And he points out that Scott Jurek did the Appalachian Trail in 45 days and some hours. And the actual count was 46 days, 8 hours, and 7 minutes, top to bottom, start to finish, however you want to call it, back in 2015. And the question posed is that, you know, that makes him the quote-unquote realest hiker of them all, but at some point does going too fast take away from the realness? And I'll defer to you for the the opening comment on this, since you're more of a hiker than I am.
So actually, I was looking it up, and he's actually been beaten now, I think, a couple of times. So it's like in the 45-day range now. But, I mean, it gets you to thinking, that's 2,200 miles that someone covered in 45 days. The average person does it between, you know, 4 and 7 months, with the majority falling right in that six-month time window. So that is crazy. Personally, I like getting out to enjoy being out. I don't mind a challenge every now and then, but I think that's going, for me, a little bit too far.
I kind of feel like if you're doing it for the sake of doing it, like being able to say, I've done 2,200 miles through the woods faster than anybody's ever done 2,200 miles through the woods, you know, that's a feather in your cap. But most people I know, myself included, do things like, you know, hiking, backpacking, camping, things like that, to experience and enjoy nature. And I don't feel like you would get any of that if you're just blistering through the trail at that rate.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I actually enjoy about doing the YouTube thing, is it has forced me to slow down and see what's around me, because I want to capture what I'm seeing, the views, the, you know, the subtle things that most people, especially if you're doing, you know, 30, 40, 50 mile days, and you just don't have time to stop. You don't have time to take it all in. So that's what I love about what I'm doing, is it gives me a new perspective. I've got to slow down. I've got to take my time to see those things, to capture them so that I can share them with everybody else.
I whipped out my trusty abacus and did some long division, and 2,200 miles by 45 days comes up to close to a 49 mile day every day. Ooh. Unless, I mean, that's not counting, you know, potential 0 days. And, you know, how do you have an opportunity to even eat when you're doing, wow, something like that? And I mean, I'll give it to him. That's a hell of an accomplishment. I mean, dude went out and
oh, yeah,
cracked down, but to what end? Like, besides the kudo, what could you hope to accomplish with that?
I don't know. There's actually a whole, I know some people that are kind of into this. There's actually a whole website. It's called fastestknowntime.com. And even funnier, there's a podcast, Fastest Known Podcast, that they've got 18 episodes out there right now with people talking about attempts, doing things. You can go on, as long as you have some device that's recorded your time, you can go on and log that you've got the fastest known time on XYZ trail. To me, you know, it's getting away from what I like doing. There are races out there. There are competitions out there. I don't want to see competition brought into what I'm doing out there. But that's me. I mean, it's hike your own hike, right?
It absolutely is that. It's a hike your own hike, or, you know, speed walk your own hike. And in the case of Scott Jurek,
I mean, it's, wow, just, it's impressive though. I mean, no matter how you look at it, it's absolutely impressive that someone can do back to back to back 45 days in a row of 50 mile days. Cause that's what, I mean, 49 point something, you're talking 50 mile days every day. That's 2 marathons a day.
He was shooting for 42 days to wow, put that into some perspective. And you wouldn't think that, you know, 3 days is a whole lot, but, you know, over the course of 2,200 miles, I mean, you're adding, what, 5 miles a day onto an already 50 mile day.
Yep.
So that said, I mean, I know people who, like, again, you know, going back to Brother Bones, dude's all about some fast, and he's all about some miles, but he's also all about experiencing what's out there. And so I think you really just defeat the purpose by going out there and doing something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy getting long days in. I think the longest day I've gotten in is right around the 30-mile range. I've gotten a lot of 20 to 25, but I think my sweet spot's probably somewhere between 15 and 20. Just because, you know, once you get over that, it's something that you've got to kind of train for and build yourself up to. The weekend warrior going out there doesn't have a chance of hitting 50 miles in a day. They're going to end up hurt.
Dude, 5 miles a day is my sweet spot. And even then, I'm like, I'm just ready to be done. So
I think we all have those days.
But there's really not a whole lot to go on about this particular topic. I just thought it would be interesting to point out that that's happened, I guess. And okay, so let me go on a different tack here. You know, the question was, at some point, does going too fast take away from the realness? What would you call real? Like, what would you define as realness out on the trail?
Oh, man. So I guess with a lot of these guys that are doing like these fastest known attempts on the big trails, on like the big three, the Triple Crown, the AT, PCT, CDT, they are going most of the time fully supported. So they've got a support crew that's driving, meeting them at every road crossing, giving them water, giving them food, so that they're carrying a very, very minimal pack weight. And they're just out there really, in essence, they are trail runners. They're not really hikers. They're not really backpackers, in my opinion. You know, we all have our opinions and you know what they're worth. But I think real is being out there to enjoy the experience, not so much to make it a competition.
I think that the experience, to build off of what you've just said, the experience is what makes it real. If your experience is blistering through it, you know, 45 days, then that's you. My experience is taking it slow, you know, soaking everything in, you know, to put it bluntly, you know, just taking in all of God's creation and putting it inside me and really enjoying my personal church out there in the woods. So to answer my own question that we got from this month, you know, what makes the realist? I think it's the experience, and whatever experience you're looking out to get is your real, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think, you know, what's real to one person may not be real to the next person, but as long as you're getting out there and experiencing it, hey, yeah.
To that end, you. Everybody get out and experience it as best you can, even if it's, you know, just going out in the backyard after work and breathing in some outside, you know, get it up in your lungs and enjoy your realness. And in the meantime, we'll marinate on next month's question.
Sounds good.
If you've got something that you want us to touch on, shoot us a message. You know, you can hit us up on the Hang Your Own Hang episode post on Hammock Forums. You can hit up the Hang Your Own Hang Facebook page. Mark has got his Spagyver backpacking Facebook page. Of course, there's his YouTube channel and basically every other outlet that he medias up and does so very well. And I'm at Gresh Outdoors. Y'all have a great month, and we'll see you next month.
Thanks, guys.
So, Mark, next month's podcast should be really interesting. One of the questions that I oftentimes see people ask is, you know, can you use a hammock on the Appalachian Trail, or can you use the hammock on a long trail, a long distance hike? And we know that Dutch did just that. He hiked the Appalachian Trail using his
Hennessy, right?
Ultralight backpacker from Hennessy. Well, next month we're going to have a chance to talk to Reese Hora. He's actually an AT through hiker from class of 2017, so just a little over a year ago now. He started in Georgia, like most of the through hikers, and he hiked north for 5 or 6 months.
And used the hammock the whole way, huh?
And use a hammock almost the whole way. And I think we're going to learn a little bit more about it next month when we talk to him about hammock camping on the AT.
Great. So, Jonathan, this month we've got a couple comments from our listeners, and we could start off with, let's see, username CMC for free, who commented on the Hammock forums about our previous episode 40, and he says, I don't think I've ever mentioned this before, so thank you, Jonathan and Mark, for all your efforts to providing this monthly dose of entertainment. Short and sweet. Thank you, CMC, for free. Yeah. And always like to hear comments from people, positive and negative. And
well, I don't like the negative ones.
Yeah, so. Well, it comes, and sometimes we can make fun of them on off air.
There you go.
Why we're right and you're wrong.
I'm so thin-skinned, man.
And our second comment we've got from Trevor Penny, who posted on Facebook. Just found you guys and listening to episode 4 right now in my car. Great podcast, and hello from Nova Scotia, Canada, our neighbors to the north.
All right. Yeah, welcome, Trevor. Hopefully you will have listened to this at some point in the near future.
Yep.
As you get to episode 41.
Yeah. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And just keep the comments coming, and we'll just keep them, the episodes going.
Yeah. I'm curious, for those people who are just starting to find us, are you guys listening from the end backwards to the beginning, or are you guys starting from the beginning and working your way forward from beginning to the end? So I would definitely be curious about that.
Yeah, it's not like we have spoilers or anything.
No. I would, for people who started at the end and worked their way backwards, they will be sorely disappointed for some of these earlier episodes we've done.
Yeah, but then at the same time, if you start in the beginning, you might be scared off.
Yeah, that's true.
So start in the middle and work your way out. Do a flip-flop.
That's right.
And thanks to all of our donors that we've had in the past. A special thanks to Chris Conroe and all our Patreon subscribers.
Yeah. As we've mentioned on every episode, producing and hosting a podcast isn't free. So every little bit counts. Check out our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/HYOH podcast. Or if you're a cottage vendor, consider promoting your product on our podcast for a few months.
And that's the show for this month. As always, you can find us at www.hyohpodcast.com or on our Facebook page at HYOH podcast. If you like what you hear, please give us a positive review on iTunes, or even better, you can buy us a cup of coffee by going directly to hyohpodcast.com/donate and making a one-time donation.
Right. Or tell your friends about us. We're almost at 1,000 likes on Facebook, so you can certainly do something nice for our egos and come and like our Facebook page. But if you don't even do that, what you can do is subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or whatever your favorite podcatcher is.
As always, if you want to comment or have a question, please visit our Facebook page, or you can send me an email at mark@hyohpodcast.com.
And me at jonathan@hyohpodcast.com. Yeah. Finally, special thanks to Skid Von Ark for allowing us to use his music for our intro and our outro, and to iTex for hosting our podcast. Thanks, everyone, for hanging around. Open my eyes, and what did I see? A man from Minnesota swinging tree to tree. A thin piece of fabric suspended in the air. Should I even try it? Or should you even dare? Had two straps and a couple of toggles. How this would even work, my mind began to boggle. Yeah.